Picture this. You're standing on the edge of an immense fiery funnel, a swirling vortex that bores into the very core of the earth. Flames flicker and dance, casting monstrous shadows that crawl menacingly along the walls like living things. The air is thick with the scent of brimstone and sulfur, choking your senses while the ceaseless anguish cries of souls condemned to an eternity of torment form a dissonant orchestra that shakes you to your marrow. Your heart pounds as though trying to escape your chest, a futile yearning for freedom amidst unbearable dread. This isn't just a nightmarish landscape conjured from the depths of your darkest fears. It's Dante's hell, an ingeniously crafted descent into an abyss so harrowing. It defies human comprehension, but captivates your imagination in the most haunting way imaginable. We are about to dive into the epic poem, Dante Alighieri's Inferno. A medieval maze of torment and retribution where each layer of purgatory plunges you further into scenes of eternal suffering. Reading this book, I'm thinking about the mind of the man who created it. I mean, here's Dante, and he's this deeply religious man of his time. This is around the 1200s and early 1300s AD. And thinking about it, I'd be a deeply religious man too during the Inquisition days, when they had horrifyingly creative punishments for non-believers like the Iron Maiden, and I'm not talking about the rock band, but a tall iron cabinet with a hinged front and spike-covered interior sufficient enough to enclose a human being, and then once you're inside its constricting walls, the interrogator would close the door, impaling the person on the spikes. I mean, this is the world that Dante is living in. And if I was having vivid visions of hell like he was, well, I would have been waking up in the morning, heart pounding like horse hooves, drenched in sweat. This poem, Dante's Inferno, it's one of the darkest and scariest things I've ever read. And yes, I've sifted through hellish accounts from the Bible and the underworlds of Greek mythology, but this is something else in its detail, especially for the time that it was written in. And let's cut straight to the chase. We're diving straight into hell itself by exploring this classical piece of literature. And we're not talking about some abstract place of pitchforks and red devils. We're talking about a realm that Dante sculpted from the raw material of human suffering and vice. The worst that the human soul can conjure, from the Wall Street Ponzi schemers to enslavers to apartheid and actors and mass exterminators. The perpetrators on unspeakable violence. Dante's hell doesn't discriminate. It's an equal opportunity abyss. And this isn't just a literary exercise, not just an old religious man's view of where bad folks go when they die. This is about the human condition, a mirror held up to the deepest, darkest shadows of our own souls. So let's get uncomfortable if we haven't already. What's the worst thing you've ever done? Not a misstep, not a mistake. I mean something you knew was wrong, but you did it anyway. Have you atoned? Could you even atone? What would that process look like for you? Do you believe in a literal heaven and hell in a religious sense? And if not, what about a metaphorical version? A place where your deepest regrets live, maybe. Or where your best memories forever loop, if that is your heaven. Are some people virtuous and others damned? Or is it somewhere in between and we're all flawed? And let's grapple with a weighty word, evil. It's not just a word to be thrown around lightly, but can we define its essence? What in your eyes qualifies someone or something as truly evil? Finally, what secret chambers are there in the labyrinth of your own heart? Places you avoid, places you fear, places you haven't dared to explore because they're just too dark. What would we find in the darkness if we were to explore our own shadows, our wildest desires and basest impulses? Is there a bit of heaven and hell in all of us? And finally, as we encounter lost souls, what does our moral compass suggest we do? Should we hold them in contempt or view them with compassion or ambivalence? And remember, I'm not here to tell you what to think, but to make you think. But whatever your feelings, they may just be the clearest reflection of your own moral universe. These are the types of questions that Dante's hell forces us to confront head on. So brace yourself. We are about to go on a journey like no other. A quest into the bowels of hell, and maybe more terrifyingly, into the depths of our own souls. Are you ready? Everyone, welcome to the Humanity Archive Podcast. I am your gracious host, Jermaine Fowler. And today, I have a story from history that you may have never heard before. But even if you have, you've never heard in the way that I'm going to tell it. This is an episode on Dante's Inferno. Now let's get into it. You know, history is more than just a sequence of events. It's a puzzle. Each piece helps us understand the bigger picture. But unlike other platforms that just scratch the surface, the Humanity Archive dives deep, offering context that truly matters. You see, knowing what happened is just the start. Understanding why it happened is a game changer. And this is where you come in. We're asking for your help to continue this quest for knowledge. For less than the price of a cup of coffee every month, just $2, you can be part of something impactful. Your support enables us, enables me, to explore the stories that are glossed over elsewhere. To contribute, head over to patreon.com/thehumanityarchive. Again, that's patreon.com/thehumanityarchive. You'll find the link also in the show notes. Your support is the fuel that drives us, and thank you.
We are preparing to descend into Dante's vividly imagined realms of hell. And it's not just some dark fantasy. It's a tapestry of torment woven from his complex inner battles and the social strife of his time. In our time, it's a book often assigned for high school world literature courses. I'm not sure if you did, but we read a version of Dante's Inferno in my world lit class, and I didn't have any profound insights on the poem back then. But now I can talk about it with a bit more nuance. So let's start with Dante the man. An intriguing character in his own right, Dante Alighieri, Italy's national poet, lived in an era of intense political and religious upheaval. A statesman who held office in his native Florence, he was eventually exiled when his faction fell out of favor. His response? He penned a book, a masterpiece that not only provided him solace, but also solidified the Tuscan language as a legitimate form of expression, breaking away from the Latin that had dominated literary circles in Italy. And speaking of circles, Dante spent an astonishing 13 years from 1308 to his death in 1321, meticulously crafting this epic on the nine circles of hell. This wasn't a weekend scribble. This was a life's work steeped in theology, philosophy, and his own personal moral quandaries. What shaped his work was the fact that Dante was a devout Catholic, wrestling with the perplexing notion that the classic poets and philosophers he adored, think Homer, think Plato, think Socrates, were, by the church's standards, heretics destined for hell. Imagine writing an entire epic where you tour hell and are led by someone you admire from history, but for whom your fate technically condemns to eternal damnation. It'd be like me taking a tour of hell with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as my tour guide. Now, why does all of this matter? Because Dante's hell isn't just a funhouse of horrors. It's a mirror reflecting his inner spiritual landscape and the fractured society around him. As we journey through hell's nine circles, which we're going to do in this episode, you're not just sightseeing, you're walking alongside a man in spiritual crisis, navigating a terrain as chaotic and contentious as the Florence streets on which he once walked. So fasten your seatbelts. We're about to descend into the first layer. Are you ready? Now imagine you're taking that first uneasy step across the eerie boundary that separates the mundane world from Dante's hell, and who's there to greet you but the great ancient Roman poet Virgil, your guide through this terrifying terrain, and if you're Dante, this is someone you greatly admire. And the first stop on this nightmarish tour is Limbo. This is a realm of sorrow without torment, echoing with the melancholic sighs of virtuous souls who, through no fault of their own, were born before the advent of Christianity or others who the church would have deemed as virtuous pagans, do-gooders who weren't Catholics. You're standing there amidst great minds like Socrates and Plato and Aristotle, doomed to an eternity of almost, not quite damned, but definitely not saved either. Their sighs and debates fill the air like the unsettling hum of a broken radio. Virgil, this poetic chaperone of yours, leans in and whispers, quote, "Abandon all hope, ye who enter here," unquote. Bone chilling, isn't it? Now let's pause for a second here and really dig into this, because Limbo, what are we talking about? It's this place of almosts, of great minds and eternal debates. It's a concept that's not as distant as we might like to think. You know, I can't help but consider the parallels here. How do we grapple with our own modern day in-between places? What is your limbo, really? Take a moment and think about it. Maybe it's that job you can't leave but can't stand. Or accumulating debt you ignore, mental health issues people ignore, not setting boundaries, procrastination, that marriage teetering on the edge of destruction, but you're sticking it out just for the kids. Or maybe it's the lingering questions about life or morality and, yes, even damnation that keep you up at night, that keep you stuck. Dante was wrestling with some of the biggest questions of his time, questions of faith and fate, that made him look at these intellectual giants like Socrates and Plato and ask, why? Why are they here in a place of eternal stagnation? Can such great minds truly deserve such a fate? We're moving on now, aren't we? I want you to imagine the shift in the air as we descend from limbo into the second circle of lust. The atmosphere, already thick with terror, seems to thicken even more, almost to a palpable mist. Imagine it clinging to you, like the sweet yet forbidden perfume of an illicit love affair. The cries here are not of forlorn philosophers debating ethical quandaries, oh no. These are the gut-wrenching wails and yearning cries of souls ensnared by their own desires. Picture whirlwinds of men and women wrapped together in eternal embrace, or should I say eternal struggle. Their cries rise to a crescendo, punctuated by gusts of winds that echo their own raw emotions. These people were consumed by their sexual desires in life, and now they're doomed to be swept eternally into this dark storm. It's a hurricane of human fantasy and regret, every howl a testament to the choices they can't unmake. I'm talking about the type of lust that causes obsessive thoughts and altered priorities. So here's the puzzle for you to wrestle with. How do your desires control you? To what extent have we been carried away by our own storms of passion? And what is the price that we pay for it? It's almost poetic, isn't it? But it makes you wonder, how often do we find ourselves in traps swirling in the windstorms of lust, craving, and longing? Are you just a leaf caught in the wind, or is there still a chance to find your footing? It's food for thought, isn't it? But don't snack for too long on this forbidden fruit, because we have much deeper and darker places to venture. We're only on the second circle. Whew. Now we move deeper into the pits of hell. The air, already thick with the sins of lust, shifts to something far more pungent. Now we're standing on the precipice of gluttony, and let me tell you, it's not a sight for the squeamish or the faint-hearted. You feel that biting cold and the rancid air? It's like walking into a freezer that hasn't been cleaned ever. Imagine a landscape, not a fire and brimstone, but a filth and waste. It's a sludge pit of rottenness and nourished by an incessant downpour of icy, stinking rain. And within this repugnant mire of lost souls, human figures splayed out, almost camouflaged by the garbage surrounding them. They're bloated, formless, and forsaken, much like the waste they are condemned to wallow in for eternity. Here, I thought of the question, how much is too much? I remember being a high school kid thumbing through Dante for the first time and being struck by the grim poetry of this place too, but now I wonder, how is it different from the world that we live in now in terms of our own excesses? Our overflowing landfills, our gluttonous pursuit of more
of everything. More food, more money, more of everything. Does our society not revel in its own form of gluttony? We fill ourselves to the brim, yet we're never satisfied. Isn't this circle of hell less a cautionary tale and more a reality for many? So I invite you to reflect on that as I have, and think about, when have you taken more than you needed? When have you felt the pangs of gluttony, be it for food or wealth, or are we lying in our own self-made pits without even realizing it? Now, as we descend from the sludge and mire of gluttony, the atmosphere changes in a way that's almost inexplicable. You can taste it. Metallic, like the tang of coins. The rust of corroded aspirations. We've entered into the domain of greed. The ground here isn't earth or stone. It feels like currency, coins and jewels and paper bills, all soaked in the sweat and tears of countless souls. Souls shackled to enormous boulders, bodies bent in eternal toil. They crash these boulders into each other in a never-ending cycle of futile labor. Their screams sync with the clashing, each soul uttering, quote, "Why did you hoard? Why did you squander?" unquote. And that question reverberates in the air. At what cost comes our insatiable thirst for more? I'm thinking about frenzied Wall Street floors and Black Friday shoppers. There was this instance, I don't know if you heard about it, in 2008, where a Walmart security guard was trampled to death in a Black Friday stampede, and the crowd didn't even stop, too greedy, rushing for a deal. This ran right past his dead body. These are deep questions, aren't they? These are challenging and troublesome questions, aren't they? But it makes you wonder, how are we pushing our own boulders of ambition and desire, greed for more? And are we forever caught in this self-imposed cycle? Whew, man, that's deep. Have you ever ignored your family, your loved ones, your values even, for more zeros in your bank account? Take a moment and really think about that, but don't dwell too long, because we have darker depths to explore as we go through the mind of Dante and his version of hell. Now, the tension is tight as we move forward. Just a tension you can feel. This is the fifth circle of wrath, my friends. Imagine the air is tinged with bitterness, a cauldron of boiling water where souls are submerged. Can you hear their screams? It's a hurricane of anger swirling around us. In this turbulent place, the wrathful fight each other on the surface while the sullen light gurgling beneath the waters, withdrawn into a black sulkiness which can find no joy. Sound familiar? Have you ever felt the scalding urge to strike out, to inflict the very pain you feel onto somebody else? Or maybe instead of the fire, you've experienced the ice of it, the frosty withdrawal into the self. A glacier of bitterness that builds over time. Yes, this is an emotion that we've all felt, but what does it do to us on the inside? What does this unchecked rage do to the soul? You see, unresolved anger is like a corrosive acid. It starts small, unnoticeable, but it eats away layer by layer at the very fabric of our being over time. You're left with something brittle, something hollow. You might be able to function on the surface, but deep down, you're running on empty. You're running on an emotional deficit. Think, when was the last time you were so angry that you held on to it for a long time? What did it cost you? Who did it hurt? And this wrath, this unresolved anger, it doesn't just disappear. It lingers in the dark recesses of our hearts, lurking like a shadow. We carry it with us into our relationships, into our careers, and even into our beds at night. And what's worse, it blinds us. It blinds us to reason, to compassion, to the better angels of our nature. So I want you to think, really think, what does your anger serve? Is it a tool that you wield with conscious intent, or has it become the master pulling your strings, guiding your actions and reactions? If you're lashing out at the world or withdrawing from it, ask yourself, what part of your soul is paying the price? Understanding wrath is the first step to mastering it. It's a part of us, yes, but it doesn't have to define us. Don't let it become a prison that keeps you from growing, from loving, from living. Take that step back, look in the mirror, and confront that part of you. It's the only way to get free. Now, as we leave behind wrath, the air thins, filling with the acrid scent of burnt parchment and crumbling ideologies. We've arrived now in the circle of heresy. The light here is dimmer, flickering as if mimicking the doubts that have plagued these souls. In shallow tombs lie heretics, confined not by walls or bars, but by the weight of their own beliefs.
forever consigned to question and re-question their dogmas and doctrines, yet never finding answers. And that makes you wonder, how do our beliefs shape our eternity? Picture ancient scholars who once defied religious doctrine, free thinkers of their time who dared to question what was etched in stone. The realm of heresy is their eternal debating chamber, a think tank without resolution. Today, information is abundant, yet misinformation is rampant. And where do you stand? Are you a free thinker challenging the status quo, or do you follow without question? What is your non-negotiable truth? And could that truth damn you in the eyes of another? Imagine confronting the worst case scenario of your most rigid belief turning out to be your damnation. Have you ever felt that inkling of doubt creep in when you're alone with your thoughts? Are you right now entombed in a shell of your own certainties? It's chilling, isn't it? Yet we cannot afford to linger here. Even darker corners of the human soul await us. Now feel that oppressive weight in the air as we descend into the circle of violence of Dante's mind. The sky above is a reddish hue, like the coals of a dying fire reflecting upon a boiling river of blood. This is Phlegethon, the river of blood, where perpetrators of violence against others are forever submerged to varying depths, their anguished cries filling the air like an infernal symphony. Have you ever raised your voice in unjust anger? Have you ever wished ill on someone, maybe even death on another? What are the consequences of inflicting pain on others? Even if you never lifted a finger in violence, have your words ever cut deeper than any blade could? And it's not just physical violence that's punished here. It's also violence against yourself, like self-harm. Souls here are transformed into gnarled trees, forever a part of the forest of sorrow. It's a multidimensional horror, nuanced in its cruelty. As we tread through this place, dodging the minotaurs and centaurs and harpies that Dante so vividly describes, ask yourself, what acts of violence have you committed, not just against others, but against yourself, against your better nature? Have you too taken part in this bloody river in some way, however big or small? These are the questions that I wrestled with as I moved through this poem, always reflecting on self. So we all have the potential for good and evil, I think. Let's move on. There's more to see and darker places to visit. The last two depths are calling us. And now brace yourselves, for we've arrived at the treacherous terrain of fraud. If you've felt the chill before, it's Arctic here, like stepping into a storm where every flake of snow is a lie told, a deception carried out. Here, Dante's imagination runs rampant, carving out various ditches for different types of fraud, from hypocrites to fortune tellers, all suffering tailor-made torments. You look around, what do you see? It's a bizarre carnival of suffering, a grotesque gallery of human deceit, false prophets with their heads twisted backward, unable to see what's ahead, thieves transformed into writhing reptiles. Can you hear the screams, their futile apologies, their belated confessions? And I considered here, what's the true cost of deception? Have you ever lied to protect yourself? Have you ever lied to yourself? Have you ever lied to harm others? Have you ever defrauded someone of trust, of love, or perhaps something more tangible? How many times have you committed tiny acts of fraud, telling yourself it's harmless? And could it be, when we deceive others, we deceive ourselves most of all? The landscape is grim here, and the air is thick with regret and cunning. These souls are like artful spiders in a wicked web, caught in their own deceit forever. I know this is a lot to digest, and you might feel heavy, weighed down by the dense air of this dismal place, but remember, we're not done yet. The bottom, the utter depths still await us, and trust me, you'll want to see where this all ends. Deep breaths, everybody. We're nearing the end of our descent, and the air is not just cold, it's frozen, a chill that reaches into the marrow of your bones. Welcome to the ninth circle of hell, the domain of treachery. This is where the Judases and Brutuses, those who have betrayed their closest relationships, dwell. We're so far removed from the light of the living world that you can't help but feel it, a looming dread that makes every other sin seem trivial. In this frozen wasteland, traitors are encased in ice, unable to move, unable to repent, their faces twisted in eternal anguish. It's as if time itself has stopped, frozen like the souls that inhabit this dark place. Is there a redemption for ultimate betrayal? How do you atone for betraying the trust of someone that you love deeply, or who loves you deeply, who trusts you deeply? The backstabbing, the
misleading, the deception. Dante ends this part with an image of Satan himself, Lucifer. Dante paints him not as some fire-breathing monster, but as a pitiful creature stuck in the ice, isolated, eternally weeping from his six eyes. His three faces gnaw on history's greatest traitors, Cassius, Brutus, and Judas. It's a wretched image of Satan. His flapping wings generate the icy winds that keep him eternally frozen in place. And this isn't just a figure of malevolence. This is a figure of self-inflicted sorrow. Can you feel that? The ultimate irony. The devil himself, the embodiment of treachery, is incapable of escape, mired by the weight of his own betrayals. But after all that darkness, redemption. That's what we must end with. After witnessing the grotesque landscapes of despair, let's not forget the poignant beauty of Dante's vision. Even in the bleakest of landscapes, there exists a pathway to light, to redemption. Quote, to get back up to the shining world from there, he writes, my guide and I went into the hidden tunnel, and following its path, we took no care to rest, but climbed, he first and I. Through a round aperture, I saw appear some of the beautiful things that heaven bears, where we came forth and once more saw the stars, even in hell, a glimpse of heaven. So imagine with me emerging from the claustrophobic caverns, the fetid mires and the icy wastes, and what greets you? Stars. Not just celestial bodies, but radiant beacons of hope, each one a distant sun, each one calling to our better selves. Imagine their light warming your face, dispersing the icy shadows of the ninth circle, reminding you of the sky, of home, of the potential for love, kindness, and yes, redemption. Redemption is such a beautiful word, isn't it? It carries within it the promise that every moment is a crossroads, that every second offers a chance for renewal. Just as Dante and Virgil journey from darkness into light, so too can we ascend from our personal hells. We can step from despair into hope, from betrayal into trust, from hate into love. That's the miracle of human existence. It's our ability to change, to grow, to seek our own stars. As we close this chapter, I invite you to take this not just as a literary exercise, but as a call to action. Look deep within yourself. Confront your own personal hells, but also ask, what are your heavens? How can you turn one into the other? And that's it for now, everyone. Next time, we'll delve into another story that holds a mirror to our human experience. But until then, keep reaching for your stars, keep seeking your light, and always remember, each of us holds the potential for damnation and salvation, and the choice is ever ours to make. Farewell, and may your journey ever be upward. I want to give a huge shout out to all those Patreon supporters pledging at the $20 or more per month level. I'm talking about you, Thomas M., Stephanie Z, Caitlin B, Clarity B, Rashad R, Shane H, Pam O, Karen M, and Kate K. And to all those over supporting over at patreon.com/thehumanityarchive, your generosity doesn't just help keep the lights on, it fuels the exploration, the in-depth analysis, and the storytelling magic that brings this podcast to life. And if you can donate at the $20 or more a month level, then you will get a shout out too. I've also included some merchandise that you'll get at every tier for signing up. Thank you for believing in what I do, everyone. Thank you for your support. Every bit counts, and I couldn't do this without you. Appreciate you listening. I love you all. I'll see you next time.